another Tile Money Podcast. My name is Luke Miller, your host. And today I had a great discussion with my old friend, Cotto. I'm almost certain he was the very first person to call me after I launched his podcast and to tell me, hey, buddy, you're on to something big here. Keep going. And so 4 years in, later, over 200 episodes, we finally got Cotto on the show. And it does not disappoint. This is one that you want to listen to twice, three times. It's packed full of information. He's got 35 years in business. He's selling his business. He has multiple facets of his business. He drops gems after gem after gem. He is now investing in musicians for his retirement. He's about to sell his business. If you want to know how he got there, definitely have a listen or a watch to this episode. Enjoy this and take yourself some notes. Tile Money Podcast is brought to you by the Tile Money University, where we discuss business ideas every single week inside our accountability mastermind groups. All right, Tile friends, enjoy this episode with Cotto Young. I'll never forget the first time, I think you were the first person in the tile industry to call me on the phone after I launched the podcast.
Well, really? The first person?
Well, I mean, I'll say the first, within the first six, you know?
Yeah.
Memory's hazy, you know, it's been 4 years, but I don't forget, I was driving my truck, you know? And you called and I answered and you explained, you know, you had been watching the podcast and Facebook group and you encouraged me to keep going. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always been a firm believer in, educating the people that need educating, you know. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot of stuff the hard way. And if I can help somebody learn without going through the school of hard knocks end of it, I try to share that knowledge. So,
nice. I'm excited to dig into it. And one of the cool things is, like I said, I mean, 4 years ago, I said, let's get you on the podcast, you know, and we've been pushing it off.
Yeah.
And the thing that kind of spurred it is you're selling your business and retiring, right? You're retiring.
Yep.
And so I thought, you know what, how cool. So tell us a little bit about the business you're selling, first of all, the name, everything, and then let's rewind and then kind of work our way forward.
Back to it.
Sure.
Well, so we just listed it about 2 months ago, and I've got two people that came from the broker that we listed it with, and a third who was a contractor that we had done a lot of work for that went out on a completely different tangent. No contracting work, no more building. He's got a H2No franchise. So, after plus 30 years and 34 years or so doing this, it's time, you know.
Yeah.
The name of our overall parent company is Columbus Design Center, and we run Alliance Kitchen and Bath and Tile Specialties under that umbrella. The tile business is what has been our mainstay. And the cabinet business, we do, we sell a custom line of cabinets from a manufacturer that's like 20 minutes away from us. And I sell a RTA line of ready to assemble cabinets from a place up in Virginia. So we're in Western North Carolina, just south of Asheville, close to the South Carolina border. And, we've had a good run. And it's definitely, it's time to go.
Yeah.
You know, the joke is always, you know, business would be great if it wasn't for the employees or the customers.
Right.
But
right.
That's not 100% true. I've got great employees. I've got one guy that's been with me for 23 years. So, he's doesn't really want to take this on, but he's going to kind of stay in the tile trade a little bit. If he plays his cards right, I think that I can get him a job as a manager with one of the buyers.
Sure.
So
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
That makes a lot of sense. I know people sold businesses before, and you know, it always works best if you can keep the employees that know the routine, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
It sounds like a very valuable business for someone. Sounds like you'll have no problem selling it. Congratulations. I mean, that's the goal, right? Is to work hard and then enjoy the fruits of our labor, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the last, I would say probably the last 10 years or so, I have not been working as hard.
Sure.
Get people, you train them, you trust them, they do the work, they do it right. And, we have worked together as a team from the very beginning. And that is, I think, our overall key to success. Not looking at what you can get out of somebody, but what you can accomplish together is why we did what we did and why we are where we are today. You know,
I like that. So. What you focus on, what you can accomplish together. I like that a lot. Well, listen, why don't we rewind now back? Did you say 34, 35 years? I guess that would be what? 80, yeah. 85, 86, 87.
Yeah. Yep.
Somewhere like that.
So I got out of the Air Force in 1980, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I've always been good to my hands. I started a contracting business on Long Island and did that for a few years. But New York weather kind of precludes a lot of work. Over the winter, if you don't have indoor stuff to do, you're not going to do anything. So I had a couple of guys that did tile for me, and I said, hey, I could probably do that. Let me learn it. Mm-hmm. So I did, and I really enjoyed it. And I liked that a whole lot more than everything else that I was doing. So I put my heart into that and just started doing smaller jobs by myself. Later on, my wife would join me. She was my sponge monkey. She'd be wringing sponges and she'd be making cuts, slowly but surely built it into a slightly bigger business, it took some time and there were days I took some commercial jobs. I'd be working until 11 o'clock at night so that we could get, keep things on schedules. My wife would bring the kids to the job site sometimes and they'd be like, mommy, who is that man? When she'd bring me dinner,
Right.
So we left New York in 1994 and moved here to North Carolina.
Okay.
Where we lived on Long Island, there was, first off, my oldest son was playing T-ball and his coach was a New York City cop. And he was talking about, the problems in the schools there already. In the middle school, they're finding kids with knives and guns and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're like, and we were close to the city. Mm-hmm. So we said, we got to kind of get out of here. Mm-hmm. Look for a place that had four seasons. I don't want to move to Florida where it's hot all the time. I like some cold weather.
Sure.
Although here, our winter is a good solid 2 weeks, and sometimes it gets below 30 degrees. So
yeah,
it's not that bad.
No, it's the winter I like.
Yeah, exactly. So we came down here and started over. And, my wife, Debbie, supported everything we did, sometimes with fear and trepidation, but she supported it. Mm. And I started over as, a one-man show. Working for builders, trying to build a little bit of a name for myself here and concentrating on quality, not churning out a bunch of stuff, but churning out less stuff, but, doing it well.
Yeah.
That was, that's always our goal. So it took a couple of years to really get built up. And then slowly but surely, one person after another, I had one young man who was working for a builder that I worked for, and he kind of was, was always watching what I was doing when I was on the job. And he's like, man, he said, that's really cool. I'd like to learn how to do that. So I'm like, but you're working for Jay. I hate to steal you from him. He goes, I was going to quit anyway. So I actually talked to Jay, and he says, well, if this guy's going to leave, he says, I'd be happy if he comes and works for you better than him going out and going away.
Well, there's a good attitude. Yeah.
I took him on and he worked for me for about 6 years. And then he got good enough and he wanted to be out on his own. And he went out and he started his own little business. And in the meantime, he trained a couple of other guys. And we had gone from being a one-man show with my wife coming and helping me on job sites to having 6 2-man teams of installers.
Okay.
And then, so it, that took some years.
Sure.
But we did it,
Yeah.
You build loyalty with your employees by looking what they want from you, not always what you want from them. Right.
Yeah.
And we set goals. I set strategic goals. And if we reached those goals, we would do certain things. And we went from, you know, the guys driving their own cars or trucks to the jobs. The first goal was if we hit this mark, I can't remember what the dollar amount was, but if we hit this mark in a 6 month period, I'm going to buy a work van. And that was for the first crew. And then the next goal was we get another van. So then we slowly built up that. We worked towards, before the work vans, we vacation, holidays, sick days, health insurance. We built on everything that we did and worked that way together. So
employees are such, this is solid gold you're sharing here, Cato, and I appreciate it. Employees are so critical to the life of a business. For a business owner who wants to sell their business or build it to, you know, achieve larger dreams and goals, it sounds like you did the exact thing that you're supposed to. I mean, and it's something that so many of us fail to do just because it's not the norm. It's not the norm in our industry for contractors that I've seen to provide work vans for a 2 to 4 man team or whatever. You know? And that's something cool. I mean, were you kind of striving for excellence, or was it the norm in the years you were doing it in the location?
Well, no, I was striving for excellence. I wanted, you know, I mean, I wanted stuff to be done. You know, I'm real OCD and real anal about stuff. And
you're a tile guy.
But yeah, exactly. But when I send guys out on the jobs, this is kind of like a stumbling block that you have to overcome when you start with employees. When you put people out there and you have a reputation for being the guy that does this work, you know, I've had people say, oh, I expected Cato to come here and do this job. Who are these guys? I said, well, these guys work for me. I'm ultimately responsible. I have trained them and they work to the same standard that I do. But it took a couple of years for people to get over the fact that, you know, when they hear that it's Tile Specialties, they think that I'm going to be doing the job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of an odd analogy, but I said, you know, if you buy a Chrysler, you don't think Lee Iacocca is out there building it, do you?
Right.
You know, it's, you know, you got to have a team. You got to have people doing that work. So, you know, with that in mind, it you just have to stay focused on making sure that your people uphold the same standards that you've established.
Mm-hmm. This is another good point, because so many installers are afraid of that very thing. A, that nobody can do it as good as they can, which just is a false, you know.
That's a false
equivalent. Yeah. And then B, that their clients are not going to want them because they believe their clients are hiring for them, which is true in a sense, but it's because of their reputation, and their reputation can be extended to their employees. Now, over the years, did that kind of uncomfortableness lessen? In other words, were people just now used to you having employees?
Yeah. And it takes a little while, and you have to stay on it. You can't just, you can't just give up and say, oh, well, this is never going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got to have that stick-to-itiveness, you know,
right.
And if you don't, then you're going to be a one man show for your whole career. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, that's not the best way to go.
Right.
You know, after a while, everybody's knees give out, and, you know, you just don't want to carry 65-pound boxes up two flights of stairs, you know?
Right.
So I think another difference that we have put into play was paying the guys hourly instead of paying them by the piece. Mm. And I charge by the square foot. We don't do job pricing. Everything is done by the square foot. But we've reached our square foot pricing by having job site analysis sheets. We have a job site sheet that everybody filled out. We don't do them anymore because we're running like a well-oiled machine now. But for about 4 years, and it's literally 4 years worth of data, mm-hmm. we compiled hours and compared square footage of installation to the type of material that it was. And then we created a whole spreadsheet. I think I shared that spreadsheet with you a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
We do it on Google Sheets.
Right.
So we've got this whole spreadsheet that we enter the square footage. We enter that we have like a drop-down menu of 5 different size from mosaics to panels. And then we go from stone to porcelains, and everything has a price assigned to it. So when we do estimates, we plug all this stuff in and it generates a number. Now, if the job is more complicated, that number can be adjusted, but that's a really good starting point. Mm-hmm. And then with those numbers in mind and how long it takes to do stuff, I know how many hours something should take, and I want to pay the guys in a way that they're comfortable, happy, not looking for another job, right, not looking to go into business and be my competitor next year, and, you know, keep focused on doing good work. And to keep them focused on doing good work, you have to take that incentive for rushing through something to get it done faster by paying them by the hour. So everybody tells me, oh, well, you know, these guys are dragging their feet or something, you know, because there's no incentive to get done. They get paid no matter what. But the people that I have don't do that because we have worked together and shared in the fruits of being successful. So their focus is on a good job. And I don't ever care if the job takes an extra half a day or an extra day. My concern is that the job is done well and we don't have to go back. Because anytime you have a callback, it costs way more than, you know, than a few hours to do it better in the first place. So that's our big thing.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, Cotto. That makes a lot of sense to me, you know. And so you've had good employee retention.
Yeah. And that's by providing a good workplace, you know. We start every morning at 7 o'clock. I've got a warehouse and that's where the vans park and the guys check in every morning. So, we have a one way travel pay. So they get paid if the job's an hour away, we start at 7, they get there at 8, they're getting paid from 7 o'clock, right? The ride home is on their time.
Okay.
But I'm paying for the gas in both directions and I'm providing a vehicle.
Sure.
So that's part of our give and take.
Sure.
You know, before that they would drive their own vehicles and heck, at the beginning they were getting paid when they got on the job.
Right.
And, you know, and that was it, which is pretty much the norm in construction.
Sure.
So when you give, they give, you know, that's the thing in a nutshell, really. So
I like that. I like that. When you give, they give.
It's kind of funny.
Now, I want to ask you about when you opened up your second and then your third kind of business. I mean, I know they're all structured, it sounds like, under one corporation, right?
Yeah.
But you have kind of three different businesses. Now, I think it was yesterday or the day before, a Facebook post in Tile Money came up. Somebody was saying they're opening up their fourth business and, you know, two of them were similar like yours. And then one of them was outside. And I think the other one was also outside and they were asking about this. And I respect a man's hustle and every American's right to be an entrepreneur and everything. Can you give us some advice for timing? You know, in other words, you know, at what point did you take on another business, another aspect, the cabinets or whatever one?
Yeah, well, first, you've got to make sure that you're very well healed in your first business, okay? Because taking on something else is going to involve more risk, more expenses, and, you know, the chance of something not working. So we took the cabinet thing actually wound up being quite funny how we started, because I was working with a trim carpenter on a project and this cabinet guy came up there and he's doing this work. And we're like, this guy's just doesn't seem to know what he's doing. You know, he's like all over the place and kind of sketchy and stuff. So the trim guy and I, Scott, we were friends. We worked on multiple jobs at this, you know, together for the same contractor. And Scott says to me, you know, we could do that, you know, why don't we do that? So I'm like, well, I've got a store. You got carpentry skills and you have, you know, multiple carpenters working for you. Let's figure this out. So we put it together and we started Alliance Kitchen and Bath because it was an alliance between his company and mine. And it was like 04. 05 or 06, right in that range when we started, which was a perfect time to start, just in time to see an economy go down the toilet. So before we had become really well established, the slowdown of 07 kind of really hit hard. We opened up a second retail location because we worked out of the store that I'm in now. And we were right down the road, about a mile and a half away from like a 300 home Arnold Palmer designed golf course community. And that developer went belly up within 6 or 7 months of us signing a lease on a store.
Wow.
We were stuck there for, you know, and made like zero money and just kind of muddled through. But luckily we both had established businesses that we could support that.
Sure.
And, you know, stay afloat. Cabinets was just a natural extension of the remodeling end of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had actually worked for a custom cabinet builder when I was still in high school on Long Island. Mm-hmm. So I have a little background in cabinetry as well. Mm-hmm. So, but after a few years of being in a partnership, I'm not a good partner person. Mm-hmm. I devote, you know, ridiculous amounts of time to work. Mm. And he and I were getting the same amount of money. Mm-hmm. And he was not devoting ridiculous amounts of time.
Yeah, when it's lopsided like that, I mean, you start to feel a little jaded. And you never want to feel jaded. So what did you do? I mean, it sounds like you bought him out.
I bought him out. You know, we talked. He was a little surprised. He was like, what do you mean you want to buy me out? I says, well, you're not really putting in the same amount of effort that I am. Sorry. And I don't feel that it's going to change. So I had the money. And so he's now back into being, well, he's not even in business in that anymore. He's had some financial mishaps, shall we say,
sure,
and has bankruptcy and stuff. And he's trying to recover from that kind of thing. So, but,
you know, it reminds me of Dave Gobus. You know Dave Gobus, right? Mm-hmm. Seen him around. I interviewed him, and I hate to misquote him, so this don't take this for his exact quote, but he said something similar. He said, you know, because he sold his business, you know, and he built it up much like you, hard worker, long hours, you know, the whole nine yards. And I remember he said, I think it was his brother or somebody else, and they came to him and they said, well, can we be partners? And he said, well, if you want to be partners with me, you know, start showing up at 4 a.m. That's when I get up and start working on the business. And then, you know, we typically work Saturdays and I work some Sundays. And if you want to show up and work, and I'll teach you everything I do, you know, and then after a while, we'll talk about being partners. And he said that, man or brother, you know, something to this extent, never showed up, you know. And then later when he sold the business, oh, people were mad at him for not giving them a slice of theirs.
Yeah, but that's how it works, you know. Yeah. Everybody wants it. See, I had not thought, or I should say, I had not planned on selling the business. Mm-hmm. I have three sons, mm-hmm. and they all worked in the business from, I mean, like age 11 and 12 on.
Okay.
You know, weekends and summer vacation, you know, you want some money? Come to work with Dad. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. And consequently, and this is a note to anybody who's got children, don't bring them into your business. Mm-hmm. Unless they absolutely want to.
Sure.
So they wanted to at first. And my assumption was that as I got older, that they would take over the business and kind of just, you know, I'll ride off into the sunset with a, you know, with a weekly stipend, mm-hmm. and they would continue on. Nah, no chance. Mm-hmm. My oldest son was like, you know, F this, I'm done with it.
Kyle's
I don't
hard.
Like it anymore. So he's finding out it's not that easy on the other side. He's got his contractor's license. He's 38. Mm-hmm. He's got his unlimited North Carolina license. Nice. Actually, he's got his national contractor's license, which is good.
That's
I don't
really
know how many states. But he's unlimited, so he can do anything from, you know, building you a tool shed to building a high rise. Mm-hmm. So, and he's doing very well with that. Mm-hmm. My middle son is an extremely good tile installer, and so is Greg, my oldest. Scott is an extremely good tile installer, but he's also an extremely good carpenter. Mm-hmm. So he prefers carpentry. So he's working as a sub. There's like two or three builders that all want him. Like all the time.
Yeah.
And my youngest son, Kevin, he's also a good tile installer, very good. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't like, he doesn't like the work aspect of so many things.
Sure.
So he went and he's got his home inspector's license and he's doing that. So, but he's also in the process of buying my oldest son garage door business because Greg started a garage door company when he was like 19.
Yeah.
And Kevin's going to buy that from him and take that over completely.
Yeah.
So they're all in, you know,
in the trade,
some kind of trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that none of them are taking this over. Mm-hmm. So it's to my dismay, but you know, I was thinking the family business would just, you know, run on, you know, maybe be 100 years down the road, you know, but.
Well, you should be proud. You have three sons that are making their own name and, you know, taking what you gave them. I mean, carpentry skills, you know, tile skills, you know, business entrepreneurship. That speaks volumes as to your, you know, approach with fatherhood.
Well, we did a lot of stuff together.
Nice.
And I think that kind of that helped. I'm a singularly focused kind of person. I used to race motocross back in the old days, and all three of my boys raced, and they're not big on team sports at all.
Sure,
so,
me too, me either.
Yeah, motocross racing is like, you know, this, what I always used to say, you know, you have friends, and you may be racing against your friends on the track, okay, but there's 40 guys on the gate, and when that gate drops, it's every man for himself, okay?
Yeah.
Friend or otherwise, you are going, you know?
Sure.
And I kind of ruined him too by telling him that, you know, second place is the first loser, and they always went to win, which is great. I mean, that's how they handle their business and stuff today too. So
sounds like it.
Yeah.
And you're a fisherman, right?
I'm not a fisherman. I'm a boater.
Oh, you're a boater. I saw the boat. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I bring worms and fish and blood and all that stuff on the boat. That's not good for the carpet and everything.
Okay. Not good for resale value.
Yeah, not good for resale, unless it's a fishing boat, you know, in which case it is good. But no, I like to go out, you know.
You got that big river, or are you on lakes mainly?
Well, I go to the river. We're about a 3.5-hour drive from Beaufort, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll put in the river over there, and then we'll take trips. We'll go down to Hilton Head, go up to Savannah, go up to Charleston, Tybee Island, and just, you know, run the intercoastal and stuff like that. It's not a big boat, you know, but it's, you know, it's big enough to handle, you know, some stuff. So it's still trailerable. So,
well, when I get up there, I'll give you a ring, and I'd love to get a tour of some of those areas. You know, that just sounds beautiful to me.
Yeah.
I got stuck in Florida during the pandemic, and I decided to stay put, but I always wanted to come up there. I mean, I've been through, you know, the airport, but that's about it.
Asheville?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. We've got a couple of really very, very beautiful lakes by us. Lake Jocassee is, it's a, part state park, part federal park, very, very limited access. They have Devil's Fork State Park is where the boat ramp is, and they've got about 50 parking spaces there.
Mm.
And when those 50 spaces are full, that's it. And there'll be days when the lot is filled and it seems like you're the only person on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very few houses around. You know, we found bald eagle nests and stuff like that, and beautiful waterfalls. So it's a lot of fun to go there.
Nice.
So if you come up, we're definitely going to Jocassee.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I'll bring my wife and daughter, and we'll have a good time.
Oh, heck yeah.
For sure. Maybe next summer, you know, would probably be reasonable for us to make that trip. We're on our way to Texas, but that's too far southeast. But anyway. Well, I really appreciate you sharing, you know, everything you've shared so far. You're somebody who's been very active in the groups, you know, in Tile Money, and I really appreciate your support over your years. What's the number one thing, you know, that you see, maybe it doesn't have to be one thing, maybe a few things that you want to give, you know, younger guys and girls advice on? You know, I see you do chime in, you know, and comment and stuff, but, you know, kind of what... We all kind of have a different view of things, you know?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I'm a little sarcastic, but...
Me too, brother.
Or maybe a lot. I would say that. I think the the biggest thing that these, you know, anyone who's starting in this trade or any trade for that matter is, and this is something that you preach all the time, and I see it all the time, it is know your worth, okay? Mm-hmm. But in order to know your worth, you've got to know how to calculate your work and your worth, because it's not just the time that you spend installing. It's the time that you spend going out, answering calls that are not really going to generate much. And you don't know that until it's, you know, until you spend some time. Know what it costs to be in business. You know, it's not like, oh, if I'm going to do, you know, 200 square feet of tile today, I'm going to make this much money. But it's not just doing the 200 square feet of tile. It's the time that it took to get that job. It's the cost of your fuel to go to that job. It's, I got to put tires on my truck, you know? Yeah. I mean, I got a story about a guy that I've tried to, I don't know how many times to help. I'm at one of the distributors, and I hear him talking with one of his clients in the showroom. And he says to him, well, you know, I get a discount here, so I'll give you the tile at my cost, and that'll save you like 25%, all right? And then a couple days later, he sees me at another distributor, and I had just put 6 new tires on my dually, all right? And he's like, oh, wow, look at you. Must be nice. You own Tile Specialties. You can buy new tires anytime you want. Look at what I'm running. And I'm like, you know what, dude? I said, let me tell you something. So I took him aside. I says, I saw you the other day up at Crossville, and I heard what you're saying to your customer. I said, I will bet you the 25% that you saved him by letting them buy the tile on your cost would have probably paid for a set of tires for your truck. Okay? And he goes, yeah, but you know, look at you. You're always clean, and I'm like dirty, and I go to the jobs, and people don't want to pay me. And I'm like, I don't know what that has to do with it. You know, you got to know what you're worth. You got to know what it costs to do stuff. And so maybe you need to get changed before you go meet someone for an estimate. Don't show up there with, you know, thin set all over your shirt and stuff, which is another thing completely. This cracks me up. I said, do you not know that you can keep a bucket of water and a sponge on hand and you can wipe that thin set off really easy instead of putting it on your clothes?
Yeah.
But that's
one of the things, I mean, let me dive in on this one too. I'll monkey pile on this. One of the things people don't realize is a clean setter is an efficient setter installer. And the thing about it is you don't start out clean. You know, you learn to be clean, and you learn to be clean by constantly wiping the thin set off your clothes. And then you find out as the years go on that you're getting less and less thin set on your clothes. I mean, my boss would, you couldn't find thin set on the man who trained me. If he got one or two drips on him, he immediately would rinse it, you know, and it was a joke. He always said he was in his Sunday clothes, and all the guys, but he was a boss. He was a working boss, you know?
Yeah.
And all the guys joked because he was so clean. And it sounds like that guy, you know, why are you so clean? Well, I'm clean because I strive to be clean. You know, I make money because I strive to make money. And all you have to do is look at me, ask me some questions, and then imitate me. You know, it's the way to do it instead of picking on you for being clean and mocking you for new tires. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. So, and that, you know, that cleanliness thing goes to everything. Mm. If you can keep your hands clean, you can keep your tools clean.
Right.
If you can keep your tools clean, you can keep your buckets clean. If your buckets are clean and they don't have thin set around the edge of it, you're not going to do $2,000 worth of damage in somebody's kitchen while you're tiling their backsplash because your thin set bucket scrapes across 7 cabinet doors.
Yeah.
Okay. So, everything plays on everything else. And that's, you know, that's how I've always tried to be. And that's, you know, that Jesse, who's been with me now for 23 years, he sometimes wants to pull his hair out because he's like, I can't get these guys to keep a clean bucket. What do I got to do to make them clean a bucket? They think, oh, the buckets are like free. We get drywall, but we throw it away. That's not the point. You got to work with it, you know?
Right.
And don't use a bucket you've been carrying floor mud in to mix white grout in later, okay? Mm-hmm. Look at all these pebbles in my grout. Yeah, no kidding. Look at the bucket you're using, you know? So it's all about building good habits and making those habits, you know, stick. So that's the worst part about training green people, you know, when they know nothing, you got to build, but you gotta build good habits. But sometimes I guess it's easier to build good habits than it is to break bad habits.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's funny. It's touchy, but
it's touchy. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? It is, because I've seen dirty installers install clean. You know, there's always exceptions to the rule, but in general, you know, it starts in your mind. A clean, organized mind, you know, a clean job site will always produce quicker work, cleaner work, you know, more efficiency, more profit, all that good stuff. I mean, if you're done with a tool and you're walking back to the van, take the tool back to the van, clear up your area. You know, I see so many job sites. I saw a post and I had to help. I'm a smart ass like you sometimes, Scott. I had to bite my tongue on my fingers on Facebook, right? Yeah. I saw a post and he said, I'm OCD. And it was of his job site, and it had so many tools laying around on the floor, and you know, and I was thinking, like, you're not OCD, like, you might think you're OCD, but you're not as OCD as some
as
people.
You are. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. No, but you know,
everybody's different.
As far as advice for guys that are starting out, I would say the biggest thing is, you know, along with knowing your worth, know what it costs you to be in business, you know, don't just be good at addition, be even better at subtraction, because you can add up how much money you're going to make really quick. Wow, this is going to pay this and this and this. But you forget, you know, like every 6 months you get this insurance bill. Better subtract that and better figure how much that costs you every single day. That way, you know what your hourly rate needs to be and all that stuff. But it's all about keeping records, keep records, keep track, you know, and then everything will kind of work itself out. And don't just think because you're working, you're making money, because a lot of guys are working and they're not. They're just turning over money.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I agree. And I want to emphasize, you already mentioned it earlier, the job costing Excel spreadsheets. You know, last week in my Tile Money University, Drake Van Hull, who is a financial expert, you know, came in and delivered a speech and gave everybody the Excel spreadsheet that he made us for job costing, you know, estimating profitability. And that's the number one thing. You know, people say, how do you know your numbers? How do you come up with your price? Well, you have to look at the past 6 months, 12 months of jobs, and continue to do that until, you know, you're comfortable, and then check yourself, you know, continue to check yourself, put checks and balances, but you got to have the tool. You got to have an Excel spreadsheet, pen and paper. Yeah. I don't care how you do it. You got to do it. You know, you got to come up with the, you know, like you say, the addition, you know, the addition and the subtraction of all the numbers, you know, and really learn whether or not that was profitable, because he showed us how to, you know, put the burden, you know, the labor burden, so many different things that most people don't think about. The overhead, you know, how much overhead per hour, per man hour, you know, and it could double the price that you think you're paying an employee. It might be double what you think it is.
It is. And you know, fringes do amount to damn near double what their hourly salary is. So it's critical. Right. That will definitely make or break somebody.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, get a good accountant, somebody who knows how to keep track of all that stuff. And, you know, I had my insurance agent, he's always asked me, he goes, how is it that, because they do our annual audits on workers' comp and everything else. And he's like, your guys are always straight. You have everything. It's like to the penny of what it's supposed to be. Well, that's, you know, my wife has accounting in her background, so she knows how to do all that stuff. So she handles that. But you got to have somebody that handles it. But he's like, I need you to teach other contractors how to do it. He says, they don't seem to know how to do it. Like, what do you mean? He goes, you know, they get their audit, and at the end of the year, they owe like, you know, $3,000+ in workers' comp because they didn't pay on everything. He goes, but and you still make money, right? You're obviously successful. He comes in and sees what we're doing here, and he goes, so how come they can't do it? I said, well, because they don't think about it, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm no genius, but it's fairly simple. You know, it's common sense. But
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I would say it's not common sense, you know. I mean, some of it might be, I suppose, but I think you have to learn it, you know. I mean, I think the thing that we do as craftsmen and as OCD tilers is really focus on the tile, you know. And,
yeah.
And then they're constantly changing thin set formulas, and the tile's constantly changing. I mean, you've seen it constantly change, you know, and this and that and the other. And it sucks you in, and you forget. Mm-hmm. You forget or ignore the fact that you're in business.
Yeah.
You know? Go ahead.
No, that's... Go ahead.
One more thing, you know, I wanted to touch on in this episode for sure, you know, and you know, feel free to speak about whatever you like, Cottle, was, you know, recessions. You know, you have lived, you know, through... If you got started in 85, you've lived through how many recessions? 2 to 3?
Three.
Work through 3 recessions. Can you give us any advice? And one thing I enjoy about you is you're not a negative Nelly. You know, people bring up this recession talk, and I'm pretty sure you normally say something like, calm down. Yeah. You know, we're making money.
Yeah. Yeah. So in order to weather the storm, so to speak, okay, you better be versatile. Okay. A lot of people want to focus on new construction and new construction only.
Right.
Oh, I'm not going to mess around with remodels.
Right.
Well, what I found is that when people can't afford to build a new house, they're fixing their old houses. Mm-hmm. So you better be able to slide right over to remodeling, because we had some of our best years. And this is funny, but we had some of our best years when recessions were going on, because we did a ton of remodeling. All right.
Nice.
And the other thing is that if you have overhead like we do, so we got a store, pay for a warehouse, pay for all the vehicle insurance and everything else. So our overhead is probably higher than a lot of other tile installers. So in order to cover that overhead, which is not going to go down just because we're making less money, you got to figure out a way to bring in more money. Mm-hmm. So what we did, so let me tell you why, and then I'll tell you what. So when you have customers and they're constantly looking, well, how much is this tile? How much is that tile? How much is this going to cost to do? Blah, blah, blah. The one thing that they never ask is, how much is that thin set? How much is that grout? How much is that backing material, right? Mm-hmm. They don't ever ask that. So what did we do? When times got tough, we raised our margins like crazy on all that stuff, right? So we made more money on the setting material, but at the end of the day, the job cost was higher, but they don't care. Mm-hmm. They looked at how much the tile was, how much the labor was. The other stuff, that's ancillary stuff. You got to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. So we made much better margins on that, and that helped us out like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
The other thing is, when you invest in your business, invest in such a way that you can you can capitalize on what you're doing. So, you know, we rented warehouse space because the little warehouse we have at the store just isn't enough. So we were paying $750 a month for a warehouse. I got pallet racks, bought a forklift, and negotiated pallet pricing with my suppliers, and then negotiated free freight. Because if I bought a half of an 18-wheeler load, they sent it for free. Mm. So if you're buying thin set and you can save $2 a bag and you can buy, you know, 600 bags of thin set at a time, that's $1,200 that you just saved, you know?
Yeah.
So, and we sell that stuff at a really good margin.
Mm.
So that $2 goes a long way. And that's just on the thin set. You know, we're a Schluter outfit. So we buy Curdy board. I buy Curdy board by the pallet. Mm-hmm. I buy thin set by the pallet. I buy, we do custom. So I use Prism grout. So I've got a rack. I've got all 40 colors of Prism, and I've got a minimum of 4 units of every color, mm-hmm. except for steel blue and whatever that ugly green color was.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to put your money where it's going to make you the most, it's got to be the most sense to do, you know? So, and the warehouse gave us a place to park the vans. It's got a little office in it. That's where the guys come in the morning instead of coming into the store. So we cut down on the amount of messy traffic that we have in the showroom, because, you know, guys come in after work, they've been on a job site, they're bringing some dirt, it happens. So it keeps this place cleaner. So that's an important important aspect. So having the flexibility to just run into remodeling, have guys that are capable of, you know, tearing out fiberglass showers and tubs surrounds without, you know, destroying half of the bathroom, neatness, cover everything with plastic, you know, ram board on all the floors. We put moving blankets down over the ram board so that we don't ruin, you know, wood floors. And that's how we've weathered every single recession. You know, we did one house. We did about $780,000 worth of tile work in one house in 2010 and 11. Of course, it was a $22 million home up in Asheville, but that was in the midst of the worst recession that we've ever lived through. Mm. You know, at least people my age. Yeah. So that was, you know, that makes for good years.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. So that's why you're so fearless. I mean, well, you're retiring too, but you know, you've lived it, you know? Yeah. And so guys, if you're listening to this right now, you know, take Cato's words to heart and, you know, understand that, the important thing is to be flexible, like he's saying, and to look for the opportunities, you know, look for the opportunities. Where are people spending money? You know, during the heart of the recession, I remember I picked up a homeless guy. He said, you know, we'll work for, you know, for my food or for my money. You know, I'm willing to work. I'm telling, you know, and so I picked him up and he worked for me for a few days and we were laughing. And he says, Luke, they say we're in a recession. It was like 2010-ish, you know. 2009, mm-hmm. something like that. He said, Luke, they say we're in a recession, but I stand on that corner every day, and all I see is one contractor after another driving new trucks, you know, going to work in the morning and coming home at night. And I said, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you can focus on the problem, or you can just say, what are those guys doing that I'm not?
Right, exactly. You know, look for the opportunities. And if you don't see an opportunity, make an opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always something you can do, always something different, you know?
Yeah.
So if you sit on your hands, then all you're going to have is warm hands. You're not really going to do anything else. So I've never been one to sit on my hands and, you know.
So what are you looking forward to in retirement? I mean, more boat time, obviously.
Well, more boat time, but as you know, I work with a country music singer.
That's right.
So that's another thing that I'm – and I really enjoy music. Music has been, you know, has been a real big part of my my existence here in North Carolina. Sure. You know, we live in a real small town, and I mean real small town. We've got two traffic lights, mm-hmm. And I have a friend who – he used to play bass with Chuck Berry.
Oh, nice.
And he got me into this thing here that he started doing, and he kind of gave it up. In town, we've got a little park diagonally across the street from my store, and we did Saturdays in the Park. Mm. And we got some nationally known, you know, like acoustic guitar guys and singers, singer-songwriters, Spencer Boren, I mean, just too many. I can't even remember them all. And they were like traveling through. They come into Atlanta. They're going to play in Charlotte. They're going to hear there. But this Saturday, they don't have anything. So we get them to play over here for us. And we were doing Saturdays in the Park every other Saturday all summer long. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of mine, actually, Red Dog, and I don't know if any of you guys have watched the Moonshiners TV show. Red Dog is one of the Moonshiner guys on the TV show, okay. But he's the real deal. Mm-hmm. Okay. He lives up here in the side of the mountain and he makes real moonshine and he's the genuine article, but he's a musician. He played in rock bands. He's a big blues guy now. And, he introduced me to Lucretia Ann, who I've been working with now for the last 4 years, about 6 years ago. And I'm not a country music fan, or I wasn't. I am now. Mm-hmm. About 6 years ago, he introduced me to her and said, you got to have her play on Saturday. And I'm like, you know, what kind of music? And he told me country. And I'm like, ah, geez, country. The reason I don't like country is because today's country music is right. less than stellar.
Right.
So
right.
he goes, no, you'll love her. She's got a great voice. And she does like old school country. Okay. Like, you know, Loretta Lynn stuff yeah, and yeah. some of her own things and Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And, when she opened her mouth, we had a backup from the stage because she is incredibly powerful. Mm. And she's got a fantastic, just amazing voice. After that show, we talked and her now ex-husband asked me if I'd be interested in helping them because I've already had this little reputation about doing this music in the park stuff. So, I'm like, well, you know, honestly, she was great. Her band was horrible. And I said, no, I'm thinking in my mind, there's not enough money in the world for me to help you. I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. And then, I didn't talk to them for a year and a half or so. And then I had an opportunity. I'm doing the, this Harmon Field Music Festival, which is, by the way, happening this Saturday. Oh. In Tryon, North Carolina. Anyone close by, come to Feed the Foothills campaign. We raised last year $27,000 for the food pantries, but that's neither here nor there. So I called her and asked her for if she wanted to do Harmon Field. And I used them as an opener because I didn't know how they were. They were a lot better. So the year after that was now 4 years ago, I used them as, you know, late in the day, not a headliner. I have real big name headliners, but, you know, a much better spot. And she asked me then, she says, do you remember what Silas asked you a couple of years ago about helping us? You think you'd be interested in helping us now? And I thought about it, you know, and went home and Debbie and I talked about it. And she goes, are you crazy? I go, what? She goes, you don't have enough irons in the fire now. You need something else to do? I said, it's not about irons in the fire. And anyway, it's a really big fire. I got room for another iron. So I had a meeting with her and, you know, we laid out some, you know, it came to some understanding about how things would work. And she's doing really well right now. We recorded second album in November last year. She got Carolina Country Music Association's Female Vocalist of the Year. The music is on Spotify.
Yeah. What's her name again?
Lucretia Ann.
That's
and
right.
It's spelled L-E-C-R-E-T-I-A. And if you Google Lucretia Ann, like a million things will come up about her.
Well, so. And what I'll do, friends, you know, is put the Spotify link and maybe a YouTube link to her in the show notes.
Oh,
here.
That'd be awesome.
You know what I mean?
And yeah,
because,
we appreciate that.
Because I am a country music fan. The old school, you know, when I was growing up, it was Garth Brooks. It was, you know, some other big names, you know, in the 80s and 90s. They were okay. You know what I mean? But as a 13 and 14 year old kid, guess what I was blasting? You know, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, Hank Williams, you know, number one, you know, all those guys. I don't know. It was my, you know, I grew up in North Dakota. What can I say? You know, when Cotto sent me, what was her name again? Sorry.
Lucretia.
Lucretia's link to Spotify. I listened and I can vouch for her. She's country.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And two albums out now, and she has written every single song herself, with the exception of one song on the new album, which her current husband actually wrote. And and I can say this because she'll be the first one to tell you, she is a country music cliche. Okay. Mm-hmm. She's on her fourth husband. And it's, you know, she's like, that's just what it is, you know?
That's
and some
funny.
Of her songs are filled with pain and anguish and stuff. And the first night I met her, I said, you know, where's a girl as young as you get all this pain and stuff, you know? And she goes, it's just country music.
I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Oh, I just had to let the dog out.
There's a song. Well,
you know, it's just country music. Ain't that the truth? You know, that is what it is. I mean, it doesn't matter if she's 20 or 60, you know, if you got it, you got it.
Right.
And if you can write like that and express yourself like that, that's something that is always needed, you know, because it touches hearts, you know, it does.
So, we're opening for, what the heck is the name of the band now? It's Smoking Joe and the $3 Pistols.
Okay.
This Friday night at Doc's Tavern down in Greenville, which is going to be a pretty big show.
Nice.
They're more mainstream. Friends of ours, the Piedmont Boys, have just finished like a 25-city tour. They went to California along the southern route, went up to Oregon, and then came back through the mid-states, you know, like through Colorado and stuff. And they're friends of ours, and they are just, you know, they're just one rung up the ladder from where we currently are now with the Lucretia Ann and Thunder Road project. And we're meeting the right people and, you know, getting the right attention. Right. And that's going to be my retirement focus. So,
well, when you texted me that and you said, this is my investment, you know, this is my investment and however you said it. And I thought, you know, that is not your typical, you know, investment. And one of the coolest things about, you know, tile guys and just business owners, right? Over the years, I've been always surprised to see random tile installers, you know, say, you know what? I remember on John Bridge, somebody got into guided elk hunting in the Colorado Mountains. I don't know if you remember this guy. And he said, I'm getting out of tile. I bought myself 6-pack of mules and we're going to do guided elk hunting. And I thought, you know what? That is so cool. I mean, to be in the mountains and do something like that and, you know, change your life.
Right. Do something you love.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, it's funny because I used to really love tile. It's not that I don't like it anymore. It's just that the time has come, you know, you do something for so long and it's, you just don't want to anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And one part of it is, and I jokingly said it before, business would be great except for employees and customers. It's not the employees. My guys are great. It's the customers. Today's customers have a sense of entitlement that just, I don't know where it comes from or why, but it's just, it's so annoying. Mm. You know, I sit back here in my little office, you know, I got around the corner over here is where my wife sits and she greets the people. And I had a woman just a few weeks ago, she's standing over there talking to Debbie saying that, you know, and you better make sure that you sharpen your pencil because I'm getting 5 or 6 estimates on this job. And it just makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And usually I'm pretty well controlled. But I don't know, something must have annoyed me that day.
Yeah.
I put my stuff down. I got up and I walked out there and I said, I just heard you say you're getting 5 or 6 estimates. Yes, I am. And so, you know, you better be sharp on your pencil and this and that. I says, well, I tell you something right now. I said, I'm going to save myself and you a lot of time. I'm not coming out to look at your job. If you want 5 or 6 estimates, get them from 5 or 6 other people. I said, I can guarantee you that we'll probably be the highest, if not the highest, maybe the second highest. If you're just looking for cheap, I wish you luck. Goodbye. And I walked back here and I sat down and her friend was out there and her friend is standing with her and she goes, well, I never. And my wife goes, well, you come here, you'll hear it again. And out they went and I could give a shit less.
Right.
It's just, that's where I'm at because these people are just, they have this need to, I don't know, make you feel like you're not valuable, make you feel like you're not going to provide something of merit to them. And they think it's just labor. You know, what does it take? You know, my husband did backsplash tile in our old house and it was just fine. Yeah, sure. Well, then let him build a freaking 6x5 shower. Good luck. I don't know what to tell you. Well, so
what grinds my gears is the quick assumption that the other person is in the wrong or not talented or, you know, trying to rip you off, you know, and we see it in the groups. It's something about the culture. You know, you're right. It's something weird. It's in the air. We see it in the groups. Somebody makes a post or something and they say, why do you think you're worth that? Or you know, they're saying you're ripping your clients off. I mean, you're assuming that this person doesn't know how to set tile and you might have never seen them before. You're assuming that they have bad ethics. You know, why jump to the worst conclusion? Why not maybe have a conversation and see how they got there.
So what are you doing that gets you that kind of money? Do you get that on a regular basis? So you must be doing something right.
Right.
You know, it is annoying. And I know the post you're talking about, because I was reading that, I think yesterday morning, right? Somebody was saying that, you know, I don't make that in a week. How can you make that in 3 days? Well, you know, whatever. Just,
I see them every week. in all the groups, you know. We're doing our best to clean it up and kind of encourage folks to think differently, but you know, it's just something, it's something to work on. You know, there's always something to work on.
In all honesty, what you started with this was the greatest thing that this tile industry has ever seen, I think. There's nobody has ever really thought about that. Remember, I told you I wrote that little article for that was how many years ago. That was my attempt, you know, but I didn't think of it the way you thought of it. Mm-hmm. You thought of it in these huge broad strokes of educating so many people, but you're more media savvy than I was. I was, you know, I'm more old school. Yeah. And when I started, there was no social media. Social media was yelling at the guy next to you in a car, you know. But I think what you've done is a tremendous service, and more people are waking up to it. And that's a really, really good thing.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for the grand compliment. I really appreciate it. And second of all, I would have probably never done it hadn't the NTCA called me, and they said, they were the first ones to call me, and they said, we see what you're doing. We want to increase our business education. You know, we want to get involved and help you. And had they not done that, you know, and Lady Creek came in as well at the same time as a sponsor, had that never happened, I don't know that I would still be doing this, because I had a growing business. I was on my third year. We were on a growth track, a trackable, sustainable growth. I will still get an email from past clients. You know, I mean, it just, in 3 years, you can really build. You know, you really can build enough client base in 3 years' time to carry you for 20 years. And the, you know, and that's a trap, you know, that's a trap, because a lot of guys will just put effort in and then they'll just work for the same people and kind of, you know, just rely on the referrals, you know, which are needed and wanted, you know, but we also want to acquire new clients, you know, and things of that nature.
Yeah. But otherwise it's painfully slow growth.
Right. Well, Cottle, this has been a very pleasurable, insightful, valuable discussion. Thank you for your time.
It's 4:30 already. I can't believe it's been an hour. It goes by fast.
You know, it's good company, and just I appreciate your encouragement over the years and now as well.
Well,
and wish you luck with retirement, and I hope to see you again here next summer.
Thanks.
I mean, in person. Hope to meet you in person or whatever.
Yeah, I hope so too. Yeah. I got to say, I feel a sense of pride in knowing you, being your friend from day one. I saw that and I says, "Damn, this guy's got it. I know he's got it, and he's going to do it." And I, you know, that's why I did what I did immediately. Yeah. So
thank you,
and I'm glad to see how successful this is becoming. And Tile Money University, I have not checked in on that yet, but I'm a little on the side of not wanting to learn too much more at this point.
I understand.
Well, maybe the new owner of this business will be interested in Tile University.
Right. And you know, we can have you on as a special guest to maybe share a spreadsheet or a job analyst or something like that, if you ever wish to, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that at all.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. This was a very enjoyable and very quick hour. I can't believe how fast it went by.
All right, brother. Well, do you want me to put your phone number or email in the, you know, people listen to this or watch this on YouTube so they can call you if they're interested in your business, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't mind. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Okay, perfect.
You've got my number.
All right, we'll do.
All right, Luke. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Tile friends, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. Cotto had a great overall presentation and shared so many insights, and I'm so happy that he came on. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And listen, if you want to learn more about the Tile Money University, head over to www.tilemoneyuniversity.com or just click the link in the show notes or the video, wherever you're watching or listening to this, to check it out. All right, Tile friends, that's it for today. Please remember to stay positive out there. You heard Cotto. We will be facing another recession, because it's just historical facts. When it comes, look for the opportunities, you know, take heart. People stay busy. People get busier during recessions often. So stay positive, and above all else, stay profitable, Tile friends. Over and out. We'll talk to you next week.